Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has experienced teams who can craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex. Real wealth requires real solutions. Connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com.
The FT.
Welcome to Banking Weekly from the Financial Times with me, Patrick Jenkins. Joining me in the studio today are Martin Arnold, our banking editor, and Emma Dunkley, our retail banking correspondent. Today we'll be looking at the change at the helm of Credit Suisse as the Prudential's Tidjane Thiam takes over from Brady Dugan. Secondly, we'll be going to Germany for a look at Commerzbank, where they are facing a conduct fine. And finally, Aldermore, the UK small business lender, is planning to float. That Credit Suisse story, though, Martin, has been dominating our attentions on Monday and Tuesday. It's a pretty unexpected move for Switzerland's second biggest bank to turn to an insurance executive.
It is, and the initial reaction of some leading city figures was disbelief, almost. They didn't expect Tidjane Thiam to leave Prudential, where he was doing very well. Most people did expect a change at the top of Credit Suisse, but somebody without any banking or investment banking experience or any experience of Switzerland was not top of their list. But on reflection, it does seem as though people have come round to the idea that Mr. Thiam, who is both very respected in the city circles and also has executed a proven strategy of expanding in Asia, could bring quite a lot to Credit Suisse. What investors expect him to do is to do something that his predecessor, Brady Dugan, failed to do, decisively anyway, which is to cut back the investment bank at Credit Suisse, which is underperforming and has been hit by a lot of new regulation, and they've been forced to hold a lot more capital against it, which is making it pretty uneconomic to do business there. So to cut that back, free up capital, and to reinvest in the private banking asset collection business of Credit Suisse, particularly in emerging markets, particularly in Asia, hence the logic of appointing somebody like Tidjane Thiam. Now, just to put this into context, there are big changes going on across particularly the European investment banking spectrum. Deutsche Bank is next month going to announce a big new strategic plan, which is expected to include pretty heavy cutbacks at its investment bank, which is also struggling with very, very low returns. Barclays has said its patience is running out with its investment bank. It's already done a big restructuring, but it's still not turning around as quickly as it would like. Royal Bank of Scotland has almost obliterated its investment bank with a drastic restructuring plan that will reduce it to a very small UK-focused business. And, you know, several others. UBS has already pretty much scaled back dramatically. So there are big changes afoot in this industry.
So is this a death of European investment banking particularly?
I think death is too strong a word. I would say that several of the European investment banks are very strong in fixed income trading areas. Credit Suisse, Deutsche Bank, Barclays all have their big trading floors that trade bonds, loans, rate products, foreign exchange products.
These are all areas that have been hit the hardest by the capital changes.
Also, the environment has been tough because there's been a lack of volatility, so there's not been very much trading going on because foreign exchange rates have been pretty stable, interest rates have been at record lows and stuck there. So there's not been much going on. There's not been much revenues from trading these things. Customers haven't felt the need to take out a big hedge on interest rates because nothing's changing. But also, the main driver is capital requirements, and that is one of the big issues that Tidjane Thiam is going to have to address, because Credit Suisse is seen as a bit of a laggard in capital terms, also in leverage terms, the amount of equity that it holds against total assets, which is a measure of indebtedness, if you like. And on both those scores, Credit Suisse needs to strengthen its balance sheet.
And I suppose the big question is whether that is sufficient to get them over the capital hurdle, or whether he will also need to go for some kind of capital raising. But I guess we won't find out for some time before he gets his feet under the table.
Well, People were speculating about the need to do a rights issue to raise fresh capital at Credit Suisse. They were even speculating about a dividend cut. Neither of those two things came last month when the bank reported full year results. And the analysts I've spoken to still don't think that they're going to happen now, because they think that Tidjane Thiam is much more likely to do what Brady Duggan was reluctant to do, which is, as I said, cut the investment bank. That frees up the capital. That means you don't need to go to shareholders and raise money through a rights issue. You don't need to cut the dividend, both of which would be things that they would prefer to avoid doing.
Well, time will tell. We should move on to our second topic, which is Commerzbank, and I'll stick with you, Martin. They're in the news again this week over past conduct issues. Tell us what's going on.
So they're being investigated by two groups of US regulators for two separate incidents, but there is expected to be a global settlement for both of them, costing the German bank about $1.5 billion US dollars. One is breach of US sanctions, where the German bank is seen to have handled transactions for clients in countries like Iran, Sudan, Cuba, which were on the US sanctions list.
An echo there of what we saw, particularly embarrassingly, at BNP Paribas and before that Standard Chartered, large fines for those sanctions breaches.
Yeah. BNP Paribas in France was particularly dramatic because it was almost $9 billion worth of fines and a guilty plea and a restriction in its ability to clear US dollar transactions. The Commerzbank one is not seen as quite as egregious, although we don't know yet. Remember, the BNP one snowballed. They took a $1 billion provision, and then 6 months later it was $9 billion they ended up paying. So who knows where we'll end up, but it's expected to come this week. It's expected to be pretty bad, but not as on the scale of BNP, I don't think. Commerzbank had a reputation of doing some business in countries where other banks wouldn't do it. So I think it's fair to say that there's going to be some embarrassing stuff in the documents that are produced by the US regulators in their usual fashion. The other element is a specific anti-money laundering failure of controls to do with the Olympus scandal in Japan. And Commerzbank was involved with that, and there's been allegedly a failure of controls at the bank regarding money that was paid during that scandal. Just one wrinkle is that the Commerzbank is still 17% owned by the German government. And so, you know, this is damaging both to the German financial system, because Commerzbank is a big lender to the Mittelstand, mid-sized companies that are Germany's big powerhouse of their economy, but also damaging to the national finances in a way, because this will only hurt the share price. But there is some skepticism in people I've spoken to in Germany as to whether there'll be the same political hoo-ha that resulted from the big fine for BNP Paribas, because the Germans aren't seen as quite as attached to their national champions as the French.
Well, thank you for that, Martin. Just to mark a change of tone away from the bleakness and bad news of legacy fines, Emma, you have a tale of a slightly more upbeat nature. Aldermore is floating.
Yes, Aldermore listed today. It's a bank that focuses on lending to small businesses as well as offering residential mortgages. And it listed on the stock exchange with shares priced at the upper end of the range at 192p, valuing the bank at around 650 million.
Aldermore was planning to float at back end of last year, am I right? But that was taken off the cards at the last minute.
That's right, yes. Yeah. So it was planning to float in October time alongside Virgin Money. However, it had to pull its planned flotation due to choppy equity markets. This is at a time when there was a lot of uncertainty in the Eurozone. So both of those challenger banks delayed their flotation, with Virgin listing less than a month later in November time. So Aldermore is chuffed to finally get it underway and said that, in fact, a lot of the investors they'd already spoken to at the end of last year were ready and waiting, essentially. So there was a lot of interest from long-only fund managers and also what Philip Monk's chief executive describes as quality hedge funds in both the US and the UK. And the bank managed to raise 75 million of capital from new shares, which it said will be used to help fuel the growth of the business.
Now, Aldermore was private equity owned, or remains private equity owned. Martin, Anacap is the private equity company that was their main backer.
I remember many years ago when I was covering private equity, breaking the story of this deal being done by Anacap when they were the first ever private equity company to buy a licensed deposit-taking institution, a bank basically, in the UK. And they bought what was then called Ruffler Bank, which specialised in lending for slot machines in amusement parks and places like that. They finance those things. So it was a very specialized niche, one branch, tiny little thing, and they built it up into this company that is now listing with a market cap, I think, of close to a billion, is it?
650 million.
Yeah. 650 million. But they're growing incredibly fast, and it is a sign of how these challenger banks are starting to emerge, that are taking some market share from the big established clearing banks. And we've got another one on the way, haven't we, Emma? Is that right?
Yes, Shawbrook is actually set to list in the next couple of weeks, a similar profile to Aldermore in that sense. And just to add that both are very much poised as strong growth companies. I mean, Aldermore, I think, said net lending is about 4.8 billion last year, although it still represents a very small proportion of the overall market. So it's less than 3% of, say, the asset finance market, about 1% of invoice finance. In terms of commercial mortgages, about 1%. So it's still very small. But it noted that it hit a sort of return of equity of about 20% at the end of last year. So it's a high growth profile company.
Well, no wonder investors want to get in on it, I suppose. Well, that's it for this week. All that's left for me to do is to thank Martin and Emma for their contributions, and thank you for listening. Remember, you can keep up to date with all of the latest banking stories at ft.com/banking. Banking Weekly was produced by Fiona Simon. Until next week, goodbye.
For more downloads, go to ft.com/podcasts.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has experienced teams who can craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex. Real wealth requires real solutions. Connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com.
The latest episode of the Next 5 podcast is out now, and it's all about AI and creativity. I speak to Doug Eck, Senior Research Director at Google DeepMind.
Creativity is part and parcel of humanity.
YouTube creator Danny Vidari.
AI can give us humans new ideas.
And Neil Maiden, Professor of Digital Creativity at City University London.
AI creates a lot of opportunities. I think it's a great leveler.
Listen to the full episode of the Next 5 wherever you get your podcasts. Enjoy.